Good evening. On behalf of the yeshiva, I'd like to thank everyone for coming tonight. It's a very good covered and schus to see so many people come out in a time that's very hectic, people taking time out of their day to hear and recall the legacy left by Rabbi Sharfman. It says, Eila Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem. There's a Rashi on the words Asher Tasim. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch LeMoshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Lo Sala Adaitcha Lomer Eshnahem Perek B'Halacha Beis O Gimel Pa'amim. That you shouldn't think, one shouldn't think just Moshe Rabbeinu teach them two or three times until they know it. But rather, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu, you shouldn't say Ve'enim Atriach Atzmi. I won't bother myself. La'avinam Taimei Adaver Perusho. L'kach Nemar says Hashem Asher Tosim Lifnehem, that you should place it in front of them Keshulchan Ha'aruch Umuchan. So apparently there would be a thought that Moshe Rabbeinu would think Ve'enim Atriach Atzmi two or three times. It's enough till they know it. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, incorrect. Keshulchan Aruch. Rabbi Sharfman possessed many unusual facets. In fact, every Talmud I meet from years ago to most recently, everyone passionately describes a different one. It almost gives me a complex, but really it's unbelievable. I would like to just highlight one midah that I personally benefited from and witnessed over and over. Rabbi Sharfman was never complacent. He never said, Eini matriach atzmi, and he was relentless. But what made such a deep impression on all of us was the enthusiasm and the excitement when he was teaching Torah. This wasn't only relegated to a shver tosis or marsha, a dvar halacha, Rashi and Chumash, any Torah hashkafa. Literally, when Rabbi Sharfman would speak to Talmidim, you physically had to remove him from the room, or you would have to physically remove the Talmidim. It just was impossible. This quality made him magnetic, and his love for Torah was contagious. He lived and taught a standard that is very missed, and he was inspirational and transformative to all his Talmidim, and the Rebbeim that had the opportunity to benefit and witness. Tonight, we have the schus to hear from Rabbi Shapiro, who was a close chaver of Rabbi Sharfman in yeshiva. He's currently involved in Torah education in the Boca Community Kollel. I know Rabbi Shapiro as a Rebbe and a Menahel who taught in high school for many years. His ability to deliver a shir with exceptional clarity drew in so many Talmidim, guys that maybe weren't yet successful in high-level learning. His ability to connect and to inspire is almost unparalleled, and he was a personal role model of mine. When I decided to become a Rebbe, I had in mind, you know, I knew Rabbi Shapiro when I was in my early years in Beis Medrash. It was very much a role model. It's very appropriate to hear from Rabbi Shapiro, who shares very similar qualities as Rabbi Sharfman at this Haskara.
Good evening, Rishus, Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbanan, and the Sharfman family. The Ramban in Parshas Kisetze on the mitzvah of Kan Tzipor tells us that the objective of all mitzvos in the Torah is either to instill within us emunos videos nechonos, correct beliefs and values, or midos tovos, refined character traits. It's usually easy to discern which mitzvos fall into the first category and which into the second. So for example, Shmirah Shabbos is explicitly linked to an educational message. Ki sheshes yomim asa Hashem es ha-shamayim v'yasa aretz. And as such, it would be categorized as a mitzvah that helps us with emunos, videos, nechonos. On the other hand, tzedakah and many of the other ben adam lechaveros obviously are intended to help develop our midos of kindness and concern for others, and as such, they would be classified as the second category, mitzvos that are trying to instill midos tovos. Now, at first glance, it would seem clear that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah would be classified as a mitzvah whose goal is solely educational, teaching us the details of the Taryag mitzvos, as well as the correct beliefs and values of the Torah. And yet, there are many sources, too numerous to enumerate, that indicate that Limud Torah is so much more. It's a tavlin. It's a sam tum. It's a panacea that helps not only with our Yirah Shamayim, but it helps perfect our character. And based on observation and experience, it is difficult to understand how this process works. It's true that when we learn, we are engaged in the most noble human calling, striving to understand divine truth. But on the other hand, the format of the mitzvah is predominantly intellectual and seemingly disconnected from the domain of midos. Furthermore, whether learning with a chavrusa or in a shir, we're doing so in a human setting that often brings out the worst in us. Ego, jealousy, competitiveness, pettiness. Effectively, we may be nurturing midos ro'os more than midos tovos in the process. So therefore the question could be asked, is tikkun midos through learning a segula, mystical and magical, or does it have a derech hateva explanation that we can emulate and strive to implement? Yeah. Rav Isaac Sher, in a maimer entitled Seichel, explains that achieving all of the milos that come with limud haTorah and developing the character worthy of a ben Torah only occurs when one learns Torah with the intent that it be transformative. This does not merely mean having kavana that Torah work its magic. It's about what he calls submitting to the Seichel HaTorah. The process of learning calls for a conscious effort to not merely learn Torah, but to acquire its system of Seichel and its perspective on life, divesting of any intellectual, moral, or psychological attributes that are not consistent with its values. When a person's thought process becomes one with Torah Hashem, his character, feelings, emotions, and instincts all operate based on Torah Hashem. Every aspect of a person is filtered through his essence, which is his seichel. And when the seichel is transformed to reflect seichel haTorah, his character develops accordingly as a consequence of that transformation. And these are the words of Rav Isaac Sher. Vim ha'adam mishtadel belimud chochmas haTorah. If a person endeavors learning chochmas haTorah, lahagia mitocha el hatachlis hazu, to arrive and to reach this goal, which is what? Lasos esichlo seichel tov. To make his seichel tov, which is defined as hamevin umaskil eich lasos tov, that understands how to do good. Almanas lasos tov. Hare zocha liyiras Hashem. With that, he zocha to yiras Hashem. Vihigia el tachlis hachachma. And he has achieved the objective of all chachma, v'hinehu tzelem elokim. Because zehu ritzono yizbarach, this is the will of Hashem, sheyigeh ha'odam mis'ale, that a person become elevated, al yedei chachmas haTorah, litzor esichlo, to shape and to form his seichel, v'la'asoso seichel amiti, and to turn it into true seichel, ha'poel b'chaim, that operates and functions in life, lehetiv al pi seichel haTorah, to do good al pi seichel haTorah. This is the derech hateva explanation of the perfection of character developed through Limud HaTorah, or at least in theoretical terms, not questioning the need for supplemental Limud HaMusar as per our Masorah. Hearing this description of the capacity of Limud HaTorah to elevate man's seichel and by extension his character allows us to understand and appreciate the avoda that we spend so many hours of our lives pursuing. It also helps shed light on two parts of an encounter between Aaron and Moshe that takes place in the aftermath of the deaths of Nadav Avihu, the highlight, the tragic highlight of Parsha Shmini. Some background is necessary. The Hakamas HaMishkan, the official inauguration of the Mishkan, took place on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the day after the seven-day miluim or dedication period concluded. It was on this day, Vayihi Bayom HaShmini, that Nadav Avihu lost their lives. After their deaths, Moshe instructs Aaron and their surviving brothers, Elazar v'Isamar, that despite the halacha that an onen does not participate in Avodas HaMikdash or eat from the meat of the kachim, the historical calling of the day demanded that Aaron and sons set aside these restrictions and allow the nation as a whole to mourn on their behalf. Moshe explained that this would have implications for the three Se'irei Chatas, the sin offerings, the goats, that were to be brought on this day. The special inauguration Seir mentioned early in the Parsha, Kichu Sirizim L'Chatas, the Seir of Nachshon, which was the first of the Korbanos of the Nesiim mentioned in Naso, and of course the Seir of Rosh Chodesh, because it was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And Moshe monitored the proceedings carefully to make sure that no errors would be made in the Seder HaAvoda. But V'eis Seir HaChatas Dorosh Dorash Moshe V'hinei Sorof. When Moshe inquired as to the status of the Seir Rosh Chodesh, he discovered that it had been burnt rather than eaten by Aaron and his sons. What was his reaction? V'yiktsof al Elazar v'al Isamar b'nei Aaron hanosarim lemor. He was angered with Elazar and Isamar, the remaining sons of Aaron, and he said, Madua lo achaltem es achatas bimkom hakodesh ki kodesh kadoshim hi. Why didn't you eat the meat of the chatas? V'osa nasan lochem lo seises havon hoido l'chaper alehem lifnei Hashem. This was the korban that was given to you by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for kapara for Bnei Yisrael. And even though Moshe respectfully directed his anger at Aaron's sons rather than Aaron himself, Rashi explains that in reality, it was Aaron who bore the brunt of the criticism. After all, the consumption of the meat of the Seir Chatas was intended to offer kapara for communal averos. And Aaron's decision to burn it rather than eat it constituted a serious halachic error in the Avodas Hayom as well as depriving Bnei Yisrael of the opportunity for atonement. Nonetheless, Moshe's reaction is almost beyond comprehension. Vayiktsof? Can we fathom displaying anger to a grieving father under any circumstances, let alone when considering the enormity and the timing of Aaron's loss? The Alter of Kelm explains that Moshe understood that despite all of the mitigating circumstances, when Kvod Shamayim was at stake, the achrayus carried by the guilty parties was absolute, as was Moshe's achrayus to deliver that message of tochacha to them. And the Alter of Kelm adds that to the extent that we are uncomfortable with the timing of this message of tochacha, it's only because of our lack of appreciation of the gravity of Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim. But as the Alter of Kelm acknowledges, this does not exonerate Moshe from the lapse in midos that should have precluded a display of kas even under conditions of justified rebuke. Tochacha is tochacha. Kas? This is, in fact, is one of the places where Chazal say that Moshe was bo lechlal kas. How can we understand this apparent breach in the character of Moshe? The Gemara in Tainus instructs us that upon observing a Talmud Chacham who is in a state of anger, that we should judge him favorably. We should don him lekav schus by realizing that oraisa hu dekom miras chalei. It's the Torah that burns within him. The Gemara concludes that rischa d'oraisa notwithstanding, a Talmud Chacham must train himself to behave with composure, as it says in Koheles, v'haser kas milibecha. What exactly is rischa d'oraisa? And what is the justification for kas under these circumstances? It is some kind of uncontrollable force that takes over a Talmud Chacham. The Maral, in a number of places in his writings, tells us that the kas shown by a Talmud Chacham under these circumstances is entirely different from the emotion of anger that is on display so commonly among laymen. It flows from Seichel. It's a product of Seichel HaTorah. And as he writes, HaSeichel Eino Mevater. Wisdom is unforgiving. Perhaps this idea can be explained with a mashal of a person who sees through a device that magnifies and clarifies his vision, affording him a level of visual acuity that others simply lack. The world is a different world, and it's often not pretty. The price of clarity is the exposure to reality. You can't unsee what you've seen. And therefore, when a Talmud Chacham's expression of anger happens, it is not in the realm of conventional midos, but rather flows as a natural outgrowth of the perspective that he has developed in the process of learning. It is a product of Seichel HaTorah, the HaSeichel Eino Mevater. Moshe, whose Chachma was unlike any other human beings, having learned Kol HaTorah Kula Mipi Agvura, understood with absolute clarity what the consequences of a little minor detail of the Sreifa of a Seir Chatas of Rosh Chodesh were. And with all of his love, with all of his empathy for his brother and for his nephews, and with all of his perfection of Midos, the clarity of his perspective, and the vision of his Seichel HaTorah still left its mark. As the story proceeds, we discover a plot twist that may provide a deeper appreciation of Moshe's behavior. As it turns out, Moshe Rabbeinu was wrong in his application of the halacha and in his condemnation of Aaron. The Mefarshim explained that Aaron defended himself to Moshe as follows. There's a difference between the Seir Rosh Chodesh, which was part of a classification of Kodshei Doros, the kind of Kodshim that would be continued to be brought throughout the generations, and Seir Echatas of the day, which were Kodshei Shah, one time, historically unique korbanos. Aaron's reasoning was that the suspension of the general restrictions on Onanim eating Kodshim did not apply to Kodshei Doros. Did Moshe accept this distinction? Vayishma Moshe vayitav beinov. What is the meaning of vayitav beinov? Rashi famously explains that Moshe accepted it. An admission of error without embarrassment. But another understanding emerges from the brief commentary of the Sfarno on the words vayitav beinov. Samach al tov svaras achiv uvanov. Sheheitivu liros. Ulahoros. Moshe rejoiced over the wisdom of his brothers and nephews' logic that they had seen and paskin correctly. Simcha. Sheer joy that his brother, under the most stressful of conditions, had been mechaven to the emes and achieved what he, Moshe, himself could not achieve. The combination of happiness for the accomplishment of another human being and the thrill of gaining a new insight into the ultimate truth of Torah brought Moshe to a level of simcha that few could even dream of. Moshe's change of demeanor from anger to joy is almost beyond imagination. Did he not feel any sense of embarrassment with the realization that his anger was predicated on his own mistake in applying the halacha? Ironically, we can now better appreciate the force of his mistaken criticism of Aaron. Moshe's life was a life of seichel and pursuit of emes. When that is one's singular purpose and the foundation of one's life, the intensity of the pursuit of truth and the warm, comforting joy of finding it can coexist. When emes dictated that Aaron had erred, the breach was unforgivable and called for reproof. When emes dictated that he had erred, nothing could disrupt the joy in celebrating the accomplishment of the one who had discovered it and the beauty of the discovery itself. As quoted from Rav Isaac Sher, Moshe was able to transform his seichel, his emotions, and his reactions to become seichel amiti hapoel b'chayim Lehetiv al pi seichel haTorah. There was no emotional outburst in his kas, just as there was no ego in his sense of elation after having been refuted. This is only possible in the personality of an individual whose entire being is governed by Seichel HaTorah. When I think about the impact that Limud HaTorah can have on the development of one's Seichel and character, the life and accomplishments of Rabbi David Sharfman, Zichrono Livracha, come to mind as a shining example. We were chaverim in yeshiva many years ago. As Hashkacha would have it, after leaving yeshiva, we rarely saw each other, with one of the few exceptions being the occasion when the Sharfmans visited Milwaukee to explore a job offer at WITS. My memories of Reb Duvi are very clear in broad terms, but a little bit hazy on details. I took the liberty of reaching out to two people with whom I'm very close. One, a mutual friend, and one, a former Talmud of Rabbi Sharfman. Both of these conversations reinforced my core memories that Reb Duvi personified the process of development of seichel and character that lie at the heart of Talmud Torah. He was smart, straight, responsible, and without shtick. He was not a kanoi, but a balshita, unafraid to call it the way he saw it, a person of strongly held opinions that were products of a seichel that saw things with clarity and conviction. But simultaneously, he was also a Baal Musar and a Baal Midos Tovos who displayed balanced behavior and normalcy, carrying himself with the utmost respect and care for others, completing the profile of a person who has developed Seichel Tov al Menas Lasos Tov. I never observed Rabbi Sharfman up close in his role as a Rebbe, but the impact that he had is well known. His appeal extended to the young Beis Medrash Bachrim in his shir, older ones who years later called on him for advice, and to many Balabatim in the community who enjoyed his popular shiurim. The Talmud with whom I spoke remembers a Rebbe who was close to his Talmidim, who showed sincere caring and warmth and would do anything for anybody. He remembers Rabbi Sharfman as the first Rebbe that he knew that actually hugged Talmidim. I enjoyed this detail because it reassured me that I wasn't crazy. And yes, there was a time when hugging actually represented concern and love rather than social convention. And it made so much sense to me that Reb Duvi was on the cutting edge of that social change. Whatever recollections I do have come into focus when I watch Yaakov Hillel and I see how he embodies the best qualities of his father and Tibodo L'chaim, his mother. Rabbi David Sharfman's wonderful mishpacha, Yeshivas Toras Chaim, as well as the hundreds of Talmidim whose lives he impacted, will always bear his imprint. May his memory continue to serve as an inspiration to all.
We will now hear from Avraham Mordechai, Rabbi Sharfman's youngest son.
I'd like to thank the Rosh HaYeshiva for having the Askar here in Yeshiva. It's been 7 years since my father's Patira. Since then, I've gone from learning Chumash and Mishnayis to Gemara. The more I learn, I realize what it means to be Amal B'Tayra, and I realize the godless of my father's Amelus and Havas HaTayra. We could always feel my father's drive to delve into learning. We could also feel his desire that learning should be sweet to us. He wanted to cultivate a deep sense of Avas HaTorah in each of us. At one of our parent-teacher conferences, the Rebbe was discussing that we had just started learning Mishnayos, and he was concerned about a poor test grade. My father was so appreciative of the Rebbe's care and concern in the discussion, and he added to the Rebbe that his main concern while building important skills was that his son was enjoying the learning. Was he into it? My father explained that his primary goal was to instill a love of learning Torah. As children, We saw my father head into his office right after Avdallah each week to prepare his halacha shir, often till 2 or 3 in the morning. This was on top of all his regular learning. He was always so enthusiastic about each shir and was excited to learn such a wide range of topics in depth. His enthusiasm was felt by us all. Now as I'm using more of my father's svarim, I'm amazed to see how many bookmarks are in each sefer. He was holding in so many places. In fact, every time I take my private svarim off the shelf, my chavrusa always looks to see in how many places my father was holding. Message I take away is that a person can achieve great heights in Torah if he applies himself and works very hard, but it should always be with an excitement and travis of Torah. He's a chabar.
Now hear from Rabbi Reuven Kamen, just one word. I've known the Kamen family for many years, and Rabbi Reuven Kamen is in the spirit of his family. I've known him for many, many summers. He has this unusual quality to be able to see people that are maybe not noticed, and he has an unusual talent and an eye to be able to fix and make better the lives of people that maybe sometimes don't get the attention and the time that they deserve. And it's a big schuss for us to hear from him.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you very much. Rabbi Shapiro, beautiful. Rabbi Mordechai. When my sister Rebetzin Sharfman asked me if I would speak this evening, I said, I'll get back to you. And I spoke to my wife, and she said, Reuven, you got to do it. Then I went to my boss, and he said, Reuven, you got to do it. And I was saying, like, I was kind of hoping you needed me to do some work around here, and maybe I shouldn't. He says, like, no, Reuven, this is big. You got to do it. So I call back I call back Rebetzin Sharfman, and I say, I very much want to speak at the Askara, but I was kind of hoping that my boss would say that I can't, because it's not because I don't want to speak, just because it's very big. It's a big task to give over the message that I want to. And it's not because I have a fear of public speaking, which I've gotten over. I speak in a lot of different places, and it's something I'm used to. But one of the things that I speak about is language processing. That's one of the things that I go around and I do training in. And language processing, one of the parts of language processing is, I'm gonna make things very, very simple and easy, is expressive language. Expressive language is taking a thought, a feeling, an emotion, a picture, and putting that into words, and then articulating that in a way that the audience will be able to hear it, and it will, and they'll understand and get the picture, the thought, the vision in which I want to express. And when that breaks down in someone, it's hard for them to communicate. Makes sense. But sometimes we all experience this when the emotion, the thought, or the feeling, or whatever it is just too big. It kind of bottlenecks, right? Like getting off the Verrazano Bridge, the upper level and the lower level just gets stuck right there. That's the feeling. And that's kind of the feeling that I have tonight. Because if I'm to represent the brother-in-law who was 10 years old when I met Rabbi Sharfman, I feel like that's a big task, and it's a lot that I have to do. So may HaKadosh Baruch Hu give me the words that come out right and express that the right way, that it'll be a schus for the neshama of Rabbi Sharfman, a chizuk for Rebetzin Sharfman, the family, and the yeshiva and the community at large. I was very nervous, Rabbi Shapiro. You like grazed through like some of the stuff I was doing. I was like really even more nervous than I was when I was preparing. But in this week's parsha, talks about the story of Nadav Avihu, and Rabbi Shapiro went through the basics of it, and I mean in depth. But through that, you got the basics. So I'm not going to do it again. And in that, we'll go through some of the midrashim. I'll unpack that a little bit, and we'll pull out some relevant attributes that speak to the qualities of my dear brother-in-law, Rabbi Sharfman, and hopefully we'll make this all nice. The Medrash Rabbah says the pasuk in Tehillim that says "Pekudei Hashem Yisharim Misam Chelev," the laws of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are straight and glad in the heart. That refers to Aaron HaKohen. His heart was sad when his sons Nadav Avihu passed away. Yet when HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught him the halacha of not drinking wine before doing the avodah, his heart was gladdened, and therefore it says "Pekudei Hashem Yisharim Misam Chelev." The Eitz Yosef says that on some level, Aaron HaKohen grieved the fate of his sons. But the words in the pasuk that say "Vayidom Aaron," that seems to imply that the silence was caused by a recognition of truth, a hakara of amitus, that he saw that his sons' fate was justly merited, that they actually it was a just fate for them, and on some level some happiness, some sadness got into his heart, but the recognition of truth is what gave him that ability and that strength to hold back and not say anything. And then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught him the halacha, which is the ultimate MS, he then had happiness and he forgot, to the point where he forgot his worldly matters. We see from the Eitz Yosef that if someone is pursuant of truth, then when they come across the truth, that can give them the ability, that can propel them to have strength that they wouldn't have had otherwise. That the fact that that Aaron HaKohen was one who was looking for truth, and the Hakara Amitos, that recognition of truth, brought him to the ability to hold back and be silent, which in the end gave him the schus to be able to have that nevuah when he was still in a state of sadness, which is not typical. And then ultimately the happiness, which was the truth that he got, that he heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he told him the halacha, which is the ultimate MS, that brought him to happiness. Anyone who knew my brother-in-law, knew Rabbi Sharfman, knew that he had a constant, unrelenting pursuit of truth. He was a truth aficionado, I'd say. His shiurim, the Talmidim talk about how there was a real, real, real pursuit of truth, and that was whether it was his to the community those shiurim, the Musar Vaden or the Hashkafic Vaden, what they referred to as the Rabbi Sharfman rants, that was all based on the on truth. Even when I was a kid, when on Shabbos or Yontif, when he would be hacking out a halacha or over a shmooze or a pilpul shir, he would always come over and like take my svarim, borrow my svarim. He asked, "Yeah, borrow my svarim." And it was good because someone should use them. But he always returned them. But the real back and forth that they had in the house was something that was very impactful. So I'm a Cayman, and those of you who know that my brothers, my brother-in-laws, many of them are in Clay Kodesh, we're Mechanchim. And needless to say, the Shabbos and Yontif table was one that I think we could all, I don't think it was official, but we were pretty certain that at 137-62 70th Avenue, that long table over there, that was where we were going to identify and solve the world's chinuch problems. And that happened weekly whenever we all got together, and that happened when we, on Yontif for sure. One year I was going to even print up for Pesach, I think it was 2015, I was going to print up t-shirts that said Chinuch Summit 2015, but it was too much of a pain in the neck back then, so I didn't print them up. So here's how it would go. There'd be a conversation back and forth, and there was no printed out agenda at the beginning of this, but a conversation would happen, this brother-in-law, that brother, they'd talk, and then an issue would bubble to the top, and it would go from two people to three to four to five, and go across the table, and then it would be heated and all that, and Rabbi Sharfman would be standing there with his head tilted, Right? Right? Yeah? No? Right? Right? Anybody, I'm not gonna, I could do it, but I'm not. And he would sit there surveying, you'd see him surveying the landscape of what's going on. And then after a while he would get up there, and then he would start saying his perspective. And there was pushback, and it was back and forth, and it was exciting. And then after a while everyone stopped interrupting him. And then there was like a downshift in his voice. And then he would go on a monologue, and everyone would listen to it because they knew that what was coming from Rabbi Sharfman was real truth, and it was really heart. It really came from the heart, and it was real truth. The Yalkut Shmoni says that Nadav Avihu's mistake was they didn't consult with each other. And the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal asks, how is that possible? That was their mistake. They both came up with the same idea. How would it have helped? And the answer is that the mere consulting with a peer, being shol etzer with someone, that collaboration, that talking back and forth would have had them realize that what they did was something that was not, their idea was not one that was a good idea. So, and that would have prevented it. A lot of Rabbi Sharfman's Talmidim from Forest Hills, even all the way back to Forest Hills, ninth grade, when he was teaching Bekiah, so I was in ninth grade. I speak to them, and when I speak to them, they say one of the things that they miss most is the ability to call Rabbi Sharfman and ask him, talk over an issue. What would Rabbi say? And when they can't come up with what Rabbi says, they feel that there's a gaping hole, and they don't have that ability. The pichus that Rabbi Sharfman had to be able to pull apart an issue and discuss it out, and I saw it with his. So, when hanging out in the halls of Forest Hills as a kid, I remember my older brother-in-law with his good friends, his chabura, and I said, just the back and forth, the schmoozing, and the learning, and I remember thinking to myself, one day maybe I'll be big, and I'll have friends like that too. Jury's out, I don't know, but that was something I always aspired to as being something that was like wow, and that's that collaboration with the friends, and then and with his family, with the family also that consulting with him, it's something that's definitely sorely missed. I'm going to try to pull out another relevant, impactful attribute. The Medrash Rabbah says that Kivan Shishama Aaron Shibno Yirei Shemayim Heim. Once Aaron HaKohen found out that his children, his sons Nadav Avihu, were Yirei Shemayim, and we'll talk about that how with Moshe afterwards. Shasak, he was quiet. The Kabal Schar Shetiguso, and he received Schar for his silence, and that scar was he was zocha to have a direct communication with a conversation with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Eitz Yosef says that it didn't even enter his mind to think such a small infraction. What'd they do already? They brought an Eish Zar. They weren't even told they can't bring that. They merited to die. Those thoughts didn't come into his mind. That mind control, that ability, that strength in Aaron HaKohen was clearly someone who cared about people. He loved his children. He definitely did. He understands love more than I understand love. He brought people together in Klal Yisrael, and the fact that he was able to hold himself back and that mind control is something that is of superhuman nature. Often when you meet someone who has the gvura and the ability to tell you something very directly and very clear and very stark, and fight for the underdog or stand up for a Talmud, stand up for the family, protectant of someone, that person, Rabbi Sharfman, one might think that someone who has those character traits, that's often coupled with someone who just speaks his mind and says whatever's on his mind. That was not the case. I'll go to my son's bar mitzvah, and I'll tell you about that. So I went over to Rabbi Sharfman Friday night before Kabbalah Shabbos, and I love the way Rabbi Sharfman used to sing. There was rhythm to it, structure. It was predictable. It was heartsig. I don't know anyone who has the same cadence to their singing. And I really wanted him to daven Kabbalah Shabbos. So I went over to Rabbi Sharfman and I said, maybe I'll daven Kabbalah Shabbos. He says, Reuven, I'm sorry, I'm just too tired. So I said, okay. I was sad, a little rejected, but it's okay. And then I heard years later that he went for a treatment that day in Connecticut and he lost sensation from waist down. And then I remembered that he spoke that night when I asked him to speak. And he spoke animated and with energy. And I remember what he said. And it was impressive. And then I heard it took him 45 minutes to walk around the block in the snow to go back to the house that he was staying at. And then I heard one of his sons came over to him during dancing on Sunday night when we had the party. Mm-hmm. He says, "Nu, Abba, we should get Leibedik. Let's get Leibedik for the Baal Simcha." And he popped up and he danced with my son. He danced with me. He danced with the family. The Gvura. The strength, the silence, the ability to do what was right and hold back and not say anything is something that I tap into every, often when I feel like I want to say it, I feel like I have to say something, but I know I really shouldn't. And I say, listen, Rabbi Sharfman, if you could be quiet there, Kamen, you got to hold it. So that's something that I still get chizuk from today. Today, I want to end with a final point. The Medrash Rabbah says that Moshe says to Aaron, "My brother, when I was on Har Sinai, when I was up on Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to me that He's going to be Mekadesh the bias with someone who's great, with a great man. And I thought that it was going to be you or I," Moshe saying to Aaron. "I thought it was going to be me or you that was going to be Mekadesh the bias. But now that I see that it was your that Nadav Aviu, it was your sons, I realized that they were greater than you. I realized that they're greater than you and I." And the Yalkut Ruveni says that one who cries over the death of Nadav Aviu on Yom Kippur, they will be zocha to have their children outlive them. If they mourn appropriately for Nadav Aviu on Yom Kippur, they will not see their sons, their children perish in their lifetime. And the Panavritcha Rav asks, he says, "What's the significance of the death of Nadav Aviu 3,300 some odd years ago? And how is one supposed to bring that so alive that they should actually feel that to the point of tears?" And he says that if Moshe Rabbeinu said that Nadav Aviu were greater than Moshe and Aaron, then two more pillars for Klal Yisrael in the formative years would have changed the trajectory of the history of Klal Yisrael. And that's something we can mourn over. And Rav Aaron Cutler says the same thing by Rabbi Akiva, by the 24,000 Talmidim, where we mourn Sfiras Omer, by Sfiras Omer, that if Rabbi Akiva was able to rekindle Torah with the few Talmidim that he had, if he had 24,000 more, could you imagine how the Torah landscape would be completely different? And I think that that's maybe why 7 years later, it's still so raw. 7 years later, we feel it. It's still so big. 7 years later, this beautiful yeshiva, this mosad, holds this event. Because it's not only that what we're sad, what we miss about the past, it's about what we could have had if we had more. I appreciate you listening to my thoughts. I hope they came out the right way. And I hope that they serve the purpose. Maybe a zchus for the neshama of Rabbi Sharfman, a chizuk for Rabbi Sharfman, the family, the yeshiva, and the community at large. May we be zocha to reunite with the Gehula ben Hera.
There'll be a Maariv in the auditorium. Before I conclude, I just want to some of Rabbi Sharpen's Talmidim are organizing a try to finish Maseches Yevamos by the yard site, and there will be a sheet people will be able to sign up. Hopefully, it'll be available for hoping anyone that's motivated would be interested to sign up. A big schus. Maariv again will be in the auditorium down the hallway.